I call to order this 1,343rd meeting of the Board of Directors of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. The date is July 16, 2009. It is 11:05 in the morning. We do have our public comment period. Do we have any public commenters?
No, sir.
Okay, good. And we have the agenda before us. Before I do that, I am going to, for reasons that I will explain in a moment, I'm going to move the motion for executive session. I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss safety and security matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6F, legal matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6B, and contractual matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6D, to the extent to which there are any of these matters to be considered. We will convene an open session of the committee following the executive session to act upon those items discussed at executive session if such action is necessary. Is there a second? Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Ms. Hewlett. Mr. Zimmerman?
So this is authorization for the session we will have at the conclusion of the main agenda here?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I would also, let me just say that at the council, the mayor is presenting us with his proposals to cut the D.C. budget by several hundred million dollars. And that meeting starts at 11:30. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask to be excused to go over there, and then I'll come back for the executive session or before, if I could just hear what the mayor's presentation is. And so I'm going to ask Mr. Benjamin if he would be good enough to chair the meeting in my absence and to commence the executive session. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Ms. Hewlett. I have a, hopefully we can add to the agenda this item as an administrative item, approval to increase the budget for the D.C. Village Bus Garage Project and borrow and repay $109,000 from the WMATA line of credit. You should have this in front of you. I'd like to, this was scheduled for executive session, but because we thought this was rather straightforward, you don't have to pass it, but we'd at least like it to come up in the public meeting. Is there objection to adding this to the agenda?
Where would you add it?
As an administrative item. Mrs. Hutchins?
In adding this to the agenda, are you saying we're going to go into executive session to be briefed on this?
No.
Or is there any?
No. No. We have other items in executive session.
Okay. Well, this is one that's just hit the table, if I recall, and I would like to have more detail on it.
Well, perhaps when it comes up on the agenda, it could be discussed. If you wish to defer it, or you wish to either defer it to executive session, is covered now, Mr. Cato.
We are prepared to discuss it in open session. This is an item that just at the last minute of finishing up the agreement that just arrived yesterday afternoon. So that's why you do not have the information in front of you. It's not a lot of detail. It's very straightforward, but legally we have to bring it back to the board.
At this point, we're just simply adding it to the agenda. Whatever the board wishes to do when it comes up is, of course, in order. Is there objection to adding this to the agenda? Hearing none, it will be added as administrative item on non-consent so that it will be discussed.
Can we vote on the motion on closed session?
Yes.
No, remember a vote?
Yes, I thought I did. Did I call for a vote on the executive session? Thank you. I thought I did. Thanks for being so vigilant, Mr. Zimmerman. Is there further discussion on the motion to approve the agenda as amended? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The agenda is approved as amended. the approval of the minutes for the June 25th, 2009 meeting. Is there a motion to approve them as if read?
So moved.
It's been moved. Is there a second? Second. It's been moved by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there discussion? 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 Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. We now proceed to Chairperson Zinkel's report from the Writers Advisory Council. Chairperson Zinkel, are you going to remain seated for your report? This is a break with tradition.
Yes, I due to technical constraints, yes, I will be giving my report.
All right, good. We're prepared to have your report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Well, Chairman Graham and members of the board, along with my monthly report today, I offer my condolences and the condolences of all of the Writers Advisory Council and the Accessibility Advisory Committee to the families and communities of those who lost their lives and suffered injury in last month's tragic accident. The RAC and AAC did officially offer our condolences through a joint resolution earlier in the month. Moving on, in light of the events of June 22nd, at our July 1st meeting, we did request and receive a briefing from Allison Hall, the Assistant Superintendent for Customer Operations and Metro Rail's Operation Control Center, on customer communications during unplanned service disruptions. This is an issue that the RAC has discussed at prior meetings with Metro staff. Regarding the type of information that is provided to riders, particularly riders who are currently on the system during service disruption situations. I have listed out in my monthly report some of the suggestions that RAC members offered at our July 1 meeting regarding customer communications, including options such as varying some of the language in verbal and written announcements to distinguish between situations where services, the trains are moving slower versus there is an actual services essentially ceased, has been suspended for one reason or another. Also, limiting the amount of jargon used in some of the announcements, moving away from sort of rail industry talk to language that civilians can understand. These are just a couple of the suggestions that were made, and we have the rest are, as I mentioned, are listed in my report. In addition, I think that we do look forward to continuing to work with folks in rail operations, media relations, and with transit police as well, and the safety folks, on making sure that when we have these types of service disruptions, that in addition to paying attention very much to the needs of the folks who are directly involved in the situations, that we're also doing what we can to smooth the experience for folks, the, in some cases, tens of thousands of folks who can sometimes get caught up in these issues as well. In addition, I have also included in my monthly report a little summary of some of the activity that the RAC has had in past years regarding passenger safety. And of course, this is something that, along with the rest of the folks here at WMATA, we all feel is very important, and we look forward to continuing to work on as well. I would also mention that I think most of you are aware that just 2 days ago, on July 14th, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee Subcommittee on Federal Workforce, Postal Service, and District of Columbia had a hearing on the Red Line accident. The RAC was requested to, I received a request from the committee to submit a record statement, which I did largely based on the board report in front of you. The statement as formatted for the committee is available on the RAC website or through our staff person, John Pasek, can also pass that on to you as well. With regard to NextBus, the RAC and AAC were both very excited to see that system come online on July 1st. We are happy to have participated in the development of this program and look forward to seeing it meet the needs of riders and continue to grow with our system. We also look forward to working in this fall with the board and the authority to help advance a thoughtful public dialogue on how Metro can meet the fiscal needs and service challenges it's facing in 2011, hopefully a process that will have more of a long-term engagement with the public And with regard to working groups and the AAC, our working group, our governance working group has met several times now to review bylaws and are also the our non-bylaw, our process outside the bylaws, and that discussion is continuing. And the AAC report this month included that this was marking, that we're marking the 15th anniversary of the Metro Access Program, which is an exciting, it's an exciting benchmark for that program. And, you know, it's a program that, you know, hopefully will in its own ways grow, providing additional access to full participation in life by individuals with disabilities. Thank you very much for your attention, and I would welcome the opportunity to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Zinkel, and we appreciate all of your participation in these issues at this very difficult time. Are there any questions for Chairperson Zinkel? Thank you. Now we proceed to the Chairman's report. I have a very brief report. I want to say that I think we had very, very good news this week, and I know our General Manager is going to comment on this, but the action by the Transportation Subcommittee in the House of Representatives to approve as a critical first step, $150 million implementing the last year's Authorization Act in terms of federal support is obviously just enormously encouraging, even though it, as we take this first step, and we're all aware of this and all very sensitive to the fact that this provides each of our local jurisdictions with a significant challenge. I know the District of Columbia is going to be challenged in the event that the $150 million is appropriated by Congress for FY10, but this is a challenge that we welcome. We are going to find the funds. I mean, I've had discussions with Mayor Fenty and with Chairman Gray. Everyone is very, very aware of the need to do this. There's a lot of different discussion about how we're going to do it and whether we're going to create new revenues or whether, insofar as the District of Columbia, whether we're going to use existing revenues and redirect it. But I feel very good about this. It's obviously a result of this horrible tragedy, and that has its, of course, downside that is obvious to all of us. But at the same time, you know, my Scottish grandmother said it's an ill wind that blays nae good. And from virtually every event, there is something positive that is drawn, which is the meaning of that phrase. And I think this is one of those things. And so we're encouraged by that. I also thought our congressional hearing went very well. I was very pleased at the participation of the local delegation, because we had, we had Congressman Cummings was there, and we had Congressman Van Hollen and Congressman Connolly, and Delegate Norton. We had also two minority members who participated, and of course Chairman Lynch was once again, he had chaired the earlier oversight hearing this year when we, Chairperson Zinkel testified and I testified and Mr. Cato, conducted the hearing very, very well. I think the questioning was excellent. I think the points that were made by the NTSB and by the Federal Transit Administration and APTA, and I mean, it was a very good set of witnesses. I think Mr. Tuite, who was the passenger who was involved in the tragedy, made a very significant contribution to the hearing, and a very compelling testimony, and it was good to have that as well, because it put a really good human face on all of this. And so I think it was a very positive hearing. I think what one of the things that we came out of it with, and I'm going to conclude on this comment, is the fact that we want to do everything we can to work with the National Transportation Safety Board so that we can get a preliminary report on the probable cause of this accident. Some of what they have done, and I have said this, and I'm speaking only for myself, others can say what they wish to say, has been central to understanding the tragedy, and some of it has been peripheral, quite frankly. And I think that one of the things that I have been encouraging Board Member Herson and the NTSB to consider is to hold a press conference and to describe what the current dilemma is regarding the challenge of finding the probable cause of the accident. We are all aware on this board of and the staff is certainly aware of the fact that we have a signaling device that was changed in the course of routine scheduled maintenance on June 17th. We had every reason to believe it was a successful installation. Following the accident, however, we had the opportunity to go back and look at it, and we saw this fluttering, which appears to be to have contributed. And at that point, I'm advised that we change the signaling device. We put in a new signaling device. It was obviously done with great care, and yet we find that the fluttering has continued following the installation of that device. And this provides us with a great mystery, which is probably somewhere near the core of what went wrong. And that's my best information. And I think that Board Member Herson, she spoke to me following the testimony, and I think it would be very contributing to the public understanding if we could focus, if we give the public the information about this much more than what I have said right in this little thumbnail, so that the public can understand why it's so essential that we have manual operation, and that it's so essential that we have the speed limits that we have in place right now. Until we realize what is happening here, in some accidents, I think it's of every kind, you know, you can readily see what the problem was. In other accidents, you are mystified in determining what the problem is. And I believe that is the case, the latter is the case in this situation. So all of that was brought out at the hearing and much, much more, and I know Mr. Cato has more detailed comments to make. Is there any discussion on these issues before we proceed to the general manager? All right, good. Mr. Cato, we're prepared for your report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me begin with the update on the events since we last met. As you heard earlier this morning, and you also mentioned, there's been some important developments in the investigation of the accident on June 22nd, and specifically 2 points. One is that the NTSB has issued the urgent recommendations that we develop a system that in real time would report on the status of all of our signaling systems and all of our circuits, and we're in the process of moving forward to do that. The second was the point you just made, that the item and the change out of different equipment at the location of the accident, the NTSB, as part of their investigation, has changed that equipment out, and still we have problems in that area. Still, the issue of the fluttering still occurs, and so that's why this investigation is still underway. They have not been able to determine what causes that, and until that happens, this investigation won't be completed. But again, I want to say, from the personal standpoint, from the standpoint of the employees of this agency, there's not a day that goes by that we still don't think about those who lost their lives. And it's been a grueling time for their families, and very difficult for them and for our employees and for everyone in this room. But I do commit to you that we will not rest until we do find what the cause has been, and have determined what we need to do and what steps to take to ensure that this type of accident never occurs again. My thoughts and our thoughts also go out to those who were injured, and we wish them a continuous recovery and a quick recovery. And I would like to take a moment here, too, to note that we've set up a website devoted to the accident and the investigation. And people who were injured in the accident can find in that website or on that website the phone number to call to seek emergency assistance or to file a claim. I know the board did set aside funds for emergency assistance, and I will talk a little bit about that later. And this webpage, again, can be found at the About Metro menu on our website, on which we've created a special page called the Fort Totten Metro Rail Accident. And that's on the Metro website that you can find. Either I'm just looking up Ramada or Metro Open Doors, and various search engines will take you directly to that site. Again, Mr. Chairman, as you have stated, and I've stated many times, this is the time for action. Even though the NTSB has not completed its investigation, we as an agency cannot wait. We met with the company, and we will meet with others that may help us, assist us in developing a system to detect circuit problems in real time. And we will continue to explore all avenues that will help us find a solution to this problem. We've spoken to representatives from transit properties across the country and around the world. We're working with the American Public Transit Association to assemble a team of experts on track signals and the circuitry of our train systems. And we're moving forward with that, even though this investigation is active, and that's with the approval of the National Transportation Safety Board. I am looking forward to that team getting started and a review of our system. And in fact, we have some members of the team who will be here in the next day or two going through our system. In addition, our action also extends to Capitol Hill. As you mentioned, Mr. Chair, yourself and I testified at a congressional subcommittee on this accident and on the need to fund this system to keep it in the state of good repair. It was well attended. I thought the questions were well focused. It was a hearing that focused on what happened, what can we do not to allow this to happen again, and the importance of this system to this region, as well as to the federal government, and an acknowledgement on the part of those who attended from a legislative standpoint, the need for the federal government to be very involved in supporting us from a funding standpoint. And as you mentioned in that regard, on Monday, the House Transportation's Appropriations Subcommittee approved $150 million for our capital needs as part of a 10-year, $1.5 billion funding program. That action must now be approved by the full Appropriations Committee by the House and Senate. And I am grateful for the support of our entire congressional delegation, which has consistently supported Metro's capital needs. We will need their strength as this bill moves forward, and we can use that funding to fund our most critical needs. We're taking steps now to prepare for the FY11 budget. Even though we just approved this budget, the FY10 budget, less than 1 month ago. We cannot wait. Later this afternoon, my executive staff and I will be meeting for several hours to start outlining a budget framework, which I will propose to the board the next time we meet in September. The events of last month make our work even more critical. Across this entire agency, we've been taking actions to ensure that this system is as safe as it can be. We're operating our trains in manual mode and will continue to do so until a suitable fix or has been applied to our system or developed for our system. We have physically inspected every one of the 3,000 track circuits in our rail system, and even though they are safe to operate, our oldest rail cars have been placed at the center of trains. We plan to order replacement for those cars as soon as funding is secured. I have no doubt that the work that we have done will have deep and lasting implications on this entire industry. The NTSB's urgent safety requirements reaches far beyond metros, beyond Metro, and transit officials from across the country and across the world are calling us to try to understand the cause of the problem so that they too can evaluate their own system. The problem that that has been identified is confronting all of us and confounding all of us. Components of the circuit that was called into question have been replaced, tested, replaced, and we continue the test, but the problem still persists in the area of the accident. If there is any good that can come out of this, is that this agency and every agency in this country will be made even safer. If we can do that, then as you mentioned before, out of adversity comes some good, and out of darkness we see some light. As a final note on this topic, I would like to thank our millions of customers for their patience, incredible patience. I regret that we have not yet been able to return to pre-accident levels of service on the red line, but as mentioned earlier, we're making improvements every day. I don't ever want to inconvenience customers in the way that they have been in the past few weeks. However, we also have to be able to respond to the NTSB's and other related testing activities to determine the cause of this accident. The NTSB's scheduled testing during the day, evenings, and weekends, and also on weekdays. But we're making every effort to provide current, accurate information about service levels to assist customers in planning their travel. Again, we appreciate their patience as we work to provide the best service possible given the circumstances. I am also looking forward, as they are, to restoring the entire red line, as we mentioned, to normal service. In the meantime, again, I thank all of our customers for being with us during this investigation, because the safety of our customers is our number one priority. In keeping with our emphasis on safety, Monday, we enacted a new, more stringent policy on operators' use of cell phones, texting, or personal digital assistance devices. Any operator caught using one of those devices while driving a metro vehicle will be terminated. We have a new zero tolerance segment of this policy that has been implemented. The new policy will allow train and bus operators to use personal cell phones during metro-defined emergency situations only. And again, those are clearly defined. It is a situation that we cannot accept going forth in the future of any of our employees utilizing those types of instrument while operating our vehicles. As I referred to earlier, the House Appropriations Subcommittee again approved the $150 million and authorized $150 million in capital grants for Metro, hopefully to begin on October 1, to be matched by contributions from our local funding partners. But before we can actually receive this funding, the compact amendments still need to be approved by Congress, and the appropriations bill must be approved by the full Appropriations Committee, then it must be passed to the full House and then the Senate. We expect that the legislation will direct us to use these funds for investment in safety, and we should have that information within the next few days. I know that maintaining the long-standing partnership between Metro and the federal government is key to Metro's ability to provide the National Capital Region with safe and reliable transit services. But we must be mindful we also have the support of the local jurisdictions. These investments will not only help to keep Metro running safely, it will also spur additional economic development in the Washington region and across the country through the purchase of parts, materials, and services. We are a long way from the service line, I mean from the finish line, but this is a very positive step forward. Also, I would like to thank all the thousands of employees who worked on the 4th of July holiday and who were instrumental in the success of that day. In addition to our regular operational staff, we had 65 specially trained additional customer service employees who worked from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at 35 Metro stations. That day, hundreds of thousands of customers helped Metro set the agency's highest ridership record for Independence Day with 631,206 trips. Metro is also working with the District of Columbia's Department of Transportation and hosting two public meetings to discuss the Metro bus routes.
Mr. General Manager, can I interrupt you just for a second?
Certainly.
Because I really have to pull away, but I wanted to make sure that the board had any questions before you go to the other parts of your report on the issues relating to the train accident. Are there any comments or questions on that before I go? Mr. Zimmerman? Not this time. Nothing. Okay, then please proceed with your report. I'm going to ask Mr. Benjamin to chair the meeting from this point. Thank you very much.
Chair, I'm almost complete with my presentation. Again, the Metro is working with the District of Columbia for public hearings to discuss Metro routes X1, X2, and X3 along Binning Road and 8th Streets in Northeast Washington. A public meeting was held on Tuesday at the Sherwood Recreation Center, and another will be held this evening at 6:30 at the Marshall Heights Community Development Organization on Binning Road. The purpose of this meeting is to get riders' comments, questions, and suggestions about ways to improve our bus services, the Metro bus services. Also, members of the board, on many occasions I've talked about the leadership of this agency and our need to work to develop future leaders. And at this point, I would like to introduce Andrew Burnside, who is our Assistant General Manager for the Department of Workforce Services, who will present the participants in the Metro's Senior Leadership Development Program. And Mr. Chair, if you would join me in a moment up front just to welcome these participants.
Thank you, John. Before I introduce the participants, I'd like to just say a few words about the program. The formal leadership succession planning program began in 2000. Our program is widely recognized as one of the most advanced in transit. It's been featured at numerous conferences held by the American Public Transportation Association, APTA, including the annual conference last year in San Diego in October, and more recently at the bus conference in Seattle, where three of our participants who are here today were invited to present at a special session. Over the years, many properties have sought information, perspectives, and lessons learned about our program. And in fact, we've received recent inquiries from Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and Miami. The model we use is consistent with generally accepted principles in the succession planning field and employed by most Fortune 500 companies. And those are the theories and practices espoused by the Center for Creative Leadership. Over the life of our program, over the last 9 years, we've had a very good success rate with 15 program participants being promoted to either director or manager positions. However, in 2008, we really kind of upped the ante at General Manager John Cato's request. And John's known as a longtime and well-known supporter of succession planning in the transit industry. He's been on the executive committee for the Leadership APTA program for many years. So as a result, the program in 2008 underwent its most significant update in its entire history. And some of those changes included that in the past, participants in the program had kind of stayed in their day jobs and their regular jobs and then taken on these additional leadership training, rotational assignments. This time we decided to kind of up the ante and put them into special trainee positions full time. We also introduced a new requirement to complete a certificate program in transportation, and they can select either Morgan State University or George Mason University. And we added the provision that if they're in good standing and they've been successful in the program at the end of 18 months, that they will be guaranteed to be placed in a director-level position. I'd now like to turn to the introductions, but before I introduce the participants, I also would like to recognize, if I could ask him to stand, Stan Jones, who's the program coordinator. Stan is a supervisor in the leadership development in our ODEV department, and has been very instrumental over the years in leading the program. Thank you, Stan. Now, as I introduce the participants, I'd like to ask you to come up into the middle and shake hands with John and the chair. And I'll talk about how many years they've been here with Metro, what they did before they came into the program, and their success. First, I'd like to ask Mr. Ray Alfred to come forward. Ray's been with Metro for 8 years. He's got 8 years of service. And before coming into the program, he was special assistant to the general manager. In addition to being in a program, Ray has completed the ENO training program in 2008. Next, I'd like to ask Roiland Frazier, who has 17 years of service with the company, and prior to coming into the program was manager of special projects and plant. Raquel Gilbert, who has 20 years with Metro, and before coming into the program was an operations supervisor in the Montgomery Bus Division. Beck Pack, I think, has the most years of service at 27 years of service with Metro. Prior to coming into the program was a senior project manager, systems in ESVC. Michael Sherman, with 3 years of service at Metro. Prior to coming to the program was a human resources generalist, 3, in the Department of Workforce Services. Ms. Shelley Z, with 10 years of service at Metro, and was our labor economist prior to joining the program. And then the last two participants have successfully moved into director-level positions, I'm very proud to say, very recently. Mr. Leroy Jones, Jr., who has 10 years of service with Metro. Prior to coming into the program was a supervisor in Track and Way TSSM and was recently promoted to Assistant General Superintendent, District 1 Bus. And then last, but certainly not least, Mr. Tren Dong, who's got 3 years of service with Metro, was an engineer in the elevator escalator division, and was recently promoted to Director of Operations Control Center Operations Bus. So this is a shining example of Metro's new leaders.
Organizations are like life, and they go in various circles where you begin and then there is an ending, and then you constantly bring new life into the organization, like the leadership class we have today. But today I'd like to take a moment to recognize a very important person in this agency who's had tremendous impacts on not only the design but the building of our entire system, as well as its maintenance, and that's David Couch. David has just announced that he will be leaving us at the end of the month to go on to Houston, Texas. He's had 26 years of experience with Metro. Currently is the Managing Director of Engineering, as well as the major capital projects. He started in 1983 on the Red Line, working on the opening from Grosvenor to Shady Grove. He was the first project manager for the Green Line extension to Greenbelt. And also from there he moved to program management, to operations, where he really instituted the rehabilitation program, which is the model for the way we keep our system current. A loss is a tremendous gain for Houston. But it's really not a loss. He will lead back visible and tangible signs of his performance within this organization. His presence has been a gift for all of us for 26 years, and I wish him luck as he moves forward. And I really, luck isn't what Dave needs. I wish him lots of success and to tell him that he will be missed, and also to tell the general manager of Houston I'm never speaking to him again. But Dave, if you're here, I just want to thank you for all the, please stand up, all the years of service. Mr. Chairman, that completes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Cato, and I would like to comment that I have also worked with Mr. Couch for many, many years. I guess about 25 at this point, and it has been an interesting and rewarding experience over all of these years, and the quality of product that he puts together is really beyond compare. He's excellent at putting things together and organizing activities and making sure the job gets done. And one evidence of that is the first item that we'll actually deal with and the supporting materials that came back to us after we requested additional information. It was abundantly clear that all of that had been produced, was all available, that all of the detail was there, and that he could array it for us so that we could understand it very quickly. I've always appreciated his insight, his capability, and his skill. Mr. Couch, you will be missed.
Thank you.
I guess the first thing I'll do is call upon myself to give the report of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. And as I said, our first item is one that Mr. Couch has been responsible for. It's the rehabilitation contract for DuPont Circle to Silver Spring for the paltry amount of $177 million. This is a new approach to how we're doing these rehabilitations by having large and encompassing contracts. Of this total of $177 million, $143 million is coming out of the Metro Matters program, all of which is included between the beginning of the program and fiscal 10, and all of which will be obligated before the end of fiscal 10. The payout of that may occur as late as fiscal 13. And another $34 million, which is part of the stimulus funding. We did ask for a list of items that were eliminated in order to see the increase from about $100 million to $177 million. How was that done? And we also asked for a chronology of how the RFP process was completed. Both of those were provided, and as I said, they were extremely good products. What we're looking forward to is this work being done with, as I think I mentioned in the committee meeting, the minimum impact on our customers, and I'm sure that we will do everything possible to constrain the work in such a way that it gets done effectively and efficiently while providing the highest possible level of service for our customers. Before I move this item, are there any questions from any board member? I do have before me two questions which Mr. Graham requested that I ask. One was on this chronology of activities. How many people actually did originally bid, and how many of them made it up to the end of step one? Mr. Couch is coming forward.
There were four initial proposals. Three of the four were considered technically qualified, and all three of the technically qualified continued to the very final stage of best and final offer.
Thank you, Mr. Couch. And the other question that Mr. Graham wanted was there a point, and can you pretty much identify the point at which the cost of this project, or this really more complex program, went from about $100 million to $177 million in this chronology?
The when we started as we went through in the December timeframe to add a few items. I've identified, Mr. Chairman, in that chronology where the items were added. It was really a gradual process that started with the addition of platforms and things of that nature, I believe in the December and February timeframe. So it was a gradual process as items were identified. As we looked at each one, we looked at what would be the quickest and most expeditious way to get it under contract, as opposed to going with a new contract, and that was the basis of the decision.
So it was a gradual process starting from the end of step one, and
yes.
As you, once you had your bids in and you were finding other things that needed to be done. One of the other issues that I know the chairman had raised before is there sufficient flexibility in this contract as we have it structured so that as there are needs identified in the future, particularly coming out of the accident or some other issue, that this they can be accommodated within the overall program?
I believe there's flexibility to do whatever needs to be completed, whether it's from the accident investigation or anything else that occurs on the entire red line in the contract.
So between the contractor and the subcontractors, there's enough flexibility and task orders can be issued in order to make that occur?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Couch. Are there any other questions? Then I move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That item is passed. The second item we have before us, item B, is for reimbursable projects. This is really for two projects, first of which is the Huntington 2 parking garage and West Falls Church parking garage. Where we have an amendment for that one in order to adjust the parking structure. And the second one is a new project, which is the Vienna Station mezzanine stairs. The total cost of this action is $3.3 million. $2 million comes entirely from Fairfax County. $870,000 are transferred from West Falls Church parking garage to Huntington, and $1.23 million is interest earnings on account at Metro. What we will be doing is modifying the fiscal 10 capital budget to include these. We'll establish a reimbursable project for the Vienna Station mezzanine stairs. We will authorize the general manager to enter into an agreement with Fairfax County for the Vienna Station project. We'll approve two modifications on the contract for the parking garage for the changes that need to be made, and initiate an award for a design build contract for the Vienna Station mezzanine. All of those actions. Are there any questions?
Just to highlight that the resolution does reflect the last update, and it is up to $2 million for the mezzanine stairs in Vienna out of the Fairfax budget.
The change being up to $2 million.
That's correct.
Thank you, Ms. Hutchins. Any other questions or comments? If not, I move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Hutchins seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This one also passes. The next one is the fiscal 2010 annual DBE program goal. This has gone to public hearing. When the committee sent it here, we asked that any changes since the hearing period had not been fully completed. We asked that any changes would be sent to us. Those additional comments, in fact, have been received. They were given to the board. And the one comment that I remember of any significance is that a number of contractors suggested that we look at the process by which we bundle contracts and perhaps unbundle some to make them more available. That does not, to the best of my knowledge, affect the setting of the goal. Is that correct? Okay.
Yes,
if that's the
that's
case,
correct.
I move. Are there any questions from board members? I move that the goal of 25% be established.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded by Mrs. Hewlett. Mr. Zimmerman.
I assume that you meant by your motion to be moving approval of the resolution.
Yes, sir.
Which is
thank you very
proposal.
Much. Yes. I move the resolution, which is in this package, for the 25% goal. Thank you for the clarification. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That one passes unanimously. Next item, resource efficiency consultants. This is a package of contracts that will help in improving the efficiency of this organization in areas such as organizational design, organizational measurements, manpower planning and management, business process reengineering, a metro management system modification, and employee performance management system. The total is $1 million. It's a professional technical contract, and this is for initiation and award for all the procurements. Any questions? If not, I move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Giancola seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This item also passes. The last item we have before us is procurement streamlining initiatives. This deals very specifically with the issue of non-competitive contracts, and it grants the general manager the approval authority for non-competitive contracts up to $1 million if the contracts appear in the plan of contracts that is approved annually with a budget. The staff will also report quarterly to the board regarding any contract awards. We did again ask for some materials to be supplied, and that was the plan of contracts with the sole source, projected sole source contracts identified, and that was provided to the board. We do have a blue sheet on here. Was there a change here that we should be noting? We have the resolution, and then there's also a blue version of the resolution. Does anybody know what the change was?
Yes, Mr. Benjamin, excuse me, it was just to clarify that the report will be on the plan of contracts items that have been identified rather than on all sole source because the board may have otherwise approved. So,
okay.
There's just a minor clarification.
And could you tell us exactly where that is?
It's in the next third to the last resolved, and then there was also a change to specify when the plan of contracts would be provided to the board. The board had asked for the plan to be provided in sufficient time in advance of action, so that's been specified to be provided by May 1st of each year or at least 30 days before it's taken up by the appropriate committee.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. O'Keefe.
Ms. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, the last thing you mentioned appears to be the same language that was in the earlier version of the resolution. The only change I see is the second resolve clause, which now reads that staff will provide a quarterly report to the board of directors on the contracts list on the plan of contracts, which have been awarded on a non-competitive or sole source basis, which previously said... No, I don't see a difference there either.
That doesn't
previously
say on the plan of contracts.
Oh, that's the, okay, it's additional language on the plan of contracts. Okay,
right.
So is that the only change to this resolution then?
Yes.
Okay. It would be useful in the future when they're revised, first if they indicate, I mean, we knew because it's blue, but it should probably say revised on it. And if you can show changes to language with underlining or deletion, I think that that's helpful in pointing us directly to the changes that have been made.
Okay, are there any other comments or questions? If not, I move this item. Is there a second?
Second.
A second, that was Ms. Hewlett. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This item also passes. That brings us to our administrative items, in which we have four now. I'd like to move numbers 1 and 3. Is there any objection to moving 1 and 3?
Second.
Okay. Mr. Zimmerman seconds. All in favor of items 1 and 3?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Those pass. On item 2, I just wanted to comment myself before moving it. This was another one of those examples where a project was actually, or the package, was put together exceptionally well. It has a really good description of what the individual actions are, how they're going to be carried out, what funding there is for the actions, and what the funding impact is. This is the kind of model for the materials that should be brought to the board that I personally would like to see, and I think we all would like to see. It's a really good package. That having been said, I move item 2, the annual work program for vehicle consultants. Is there a second?
One question.
Oh, Mr. Zimmerman.
Just in terms of the scope of this this project, the services that are being provided here include work on existing rail cars? Does it include the procurement, the prospective procurement for the 7000 series?
This is basically the final year of this contract option. We will be transitioning with our a new consultant services for the 7K. This is just pretty much to close up the twos and the threes and the sixes in transition.
Okay, so this is for the work on the existing fleet, the older cars?
Yes.
Okay.
So it does seem to include Dulles Rail.
It does have some of that in there.
Okay.
But moving forward, this is was our cleanest time to transition to the next phase.
That's the downside of having this so clearly laid out, is we have more questions.
Well, what's clearly laid out is the funding side of it, which, you know, obviously is great interest. But I was asking not about where the revenue is coming to cover it, but about the scope of work that would be performed, which is not the same thing, of course. So, for instance, there's rehab work on the, you know, the 4000 series.
Twos and threes,
but not four.
This is the rehab work, say, for instance, for the closeout of the contracts.
The ones already done, basically.
The ones that are already done.
Okay. So this is all basically wrapping up this last set of things. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments? This was previously moved by me, and I believe Ms. Hutchins did the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No one opposed. That leaves us with the DC Village Bus Garage project, which is a new item, which has just been handed to us. I believe we have only a resolution. Is that right? No other materials? If somebody could explain to us exactly what happened here, that might be helpful.
Mr. Monomay will explain that to you.
Okay, good afternoon. Real quickly, as I shared with you the last time I think we met, there were two outstanding items that we needed approval from FTA on this project to be able to move forward and close on this site this month. The two things were the environmental clearance. We did get a categorical exclusion from FTA just this week. It's one of the reasons why we delay getting this information out. And the last thing is we need to request a budget increase, and that's what this document does. It requests an increase of the budget of $675,000. And then two, it takes as a funding source interest earned on the $60 million in proceeds from the sale of the Southeast Bus Garage. It also takes $109,000 for a line of credit, and then replaces those funds with further interest accrued on the $60 million as we move forward with the project. So it allows us to be able to move this project forward and deal with the fact that FTA had one issue about the use of the federal funds that I shared with you before. The federalization of the proceeds funds, we need to find a local source to pay for that, and that's what this action allows us to do.
Mr. Monomy, let me ask a question. How did the funds ever become federalized in the first place, since this garage was never bought with federal funds?
That's correct. That's a very good question that we asked FTA as well. In their view, as soon as we used or applied the ARRA funds, the $30 million in ARRA funds that we proposed from the stimulus project towards this project, their view is that the entire project or proceeds associated with the project became federalized. And so they created another level of process review for the use of the funds.
Okay, so the stimulus funds for the expansion of the garage were considered also to then contaminate
That's a good word.
Purchase of the land, which was a separate action.
That's correct.
So if we called it two projects, we would not have had to do this?
Theoretically, I guess.
Okay, all right. One of the curious things that happens when you do federal actions is that $1 of federal funds are involved in a project, the entire project becomes federalized, and it does show the advantage sometimes of labeling things as two projects instead of one when they're submitted for federal review, so that you separate the federal funds from the local funds. And when the board originally approved this item, did we approve that the interest would be made part of the project budget? We did. So this essentially says that you are now capturing that interest as part of the project budget. So do we have to increase the budget if, in fact, the original proposal allowed that?
Well, we've been advised that we need to bring this for an increase in the budget. It allowed it to be accrued, but this is a change in the project budget amount.
Okay, so you're saying we said originally that interest would be credited to the project, but we didn't increase the project budget by that interest.
Correct.
And we have every reason to believe that the money that we're borrowing, the $100,000 that we're borrowing, will in fact be returned within a year or two?
Let me make that clarification. Just the $100,000 that we're borrowing under the line is going to be earned from the $9.5 million that's been set aside, that's being reimbursed by the district for the headway, the deadhead change. So the assumption is that as we move forward, we're going to spend that amount by about $500,000 a month for that cost. And the earnings on that $9 million over time will probably recover in about two months' time, we'll recover about $100,000 worth of interest. So in 2 months, that will be reimbursed from the line of credit. Long answer to a.
Can I follow up on that?
No. Ms. Hudgens?
I'm recalling, as Mr. Monomay indicated, this was part of the original briefing, as I understand it, that the budget increase that occurred was in our reach. Would you please refresh my mind as to what the budget increase, what caused the budget increase?
It's the cost associated with environmental remediation.
Okay. All right. That was the remediation. And the understanding then is that the 109 will come back, and it's unfortunate because I don't think we have this defined in a particular a segregated budget piece. Is that correct? The funding that the 109 will be paid over a long term rather than what was originally understood as a reimbursable piece as part of the project earlier. The deadhead.
Yes. I mean, but that'll take. It's a 2 month. It's really a cash flow issue. So.
Well, how long a cash flow though?
I'm sorry?
How long a cash flow?
2 months.
It's only 2 months.
It's only 2 months. Okay, so we're expecting that it'll be a 2 month time before that line of credit is reimbursed for those expenditures.
Okay.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, apart from the cash flow issue, the basic source, which is $566,000, is what you call currently available interest earnings. Did I understand you to say, or somebody was saying, that that this is interest on the money put into the project that is essentially the money the district's putting up? What's the source of this interest?
Well, there's two sources of the interest. One is the $60 million from the proceeds of the land sale. The other source of the $100,000 would be from the monies that have been set aside, the $9.6 million, I believe, that has been set aside to pay for deadhead costs.
Okay, so a portion of it is the part that the district's putting up for this project.
That's correct.
But the larger part of it is the interest on the proceeds from the sale.
That's correct.
So I guess my question is, you know, is this a regular way to do these? I mean, this is the way we do this here? I mean, as far as how we would normally attribute such revenues with a project like this. Essentially, you're trying to plow that back into this project. And, you know, it seems legitimate, but is it our practice, or do we normally treat them as more general revenues? I mean, would they go into our TIF fund, or whatever we call it, you know what I'm talking about, that results from, typically we sell land, we're putting it into a fund, which has its own role and has the advantage of not being tainted at all by federal money, per the earlier comment Ms. Benjamin made. Are we handling this different than we have normally?
I don't know if there's in answer to your question, I don't know if we have done this in prior projects. We'd have to look to see how we've done this in using those types of funds for this type of project. So I can't answer that for you now. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on the whole, I mean, this looks like we have a slight increase in cost that has to be dealt with. I understand that. It seems like you got to do this. On the other hand, I'm uncomfortable with having to make a decision now that may diverge in some way from precedent and practice and you know, might have other implications. It's not a huge amount of money, but I'm not entirely comfortable with the fact that we can't get an answer about how what we're asked to do compares to what our normal practice is or what it might mean for any future such actions.
Ms. O'Keefe.
Mr. Zimmerman, I don't think this is really different. We typically have funds that sometimes it's a reimbursable project. In this instance, the board, when it directed how the proceeds from the sale were to be divided and applied, also directed that interest would in effect accrue to those projects. However, it has been our practice to come back to the board to increase the project budget by those accrued interests. It's really consistent with what we have done in the past and what we do, for example, when we get money from a jurisdiction that's applicable to a reimbursable project. The interest per agreement typically is available and accrued and segregated
to the project.
To the project, but staff comes back to the board to budget those funds and increase the project.
We have to tell you it's okay for you to go ahead and do it. I got
correct.
That part. And,
yes.
And, you know, that's really the answer I was looking for. You know, normally these things will have been vetted already, and everybody's staffs will have looked at them, and they'll say, yes, this is just like it was on our project here or our project there, and fine. The lack of comfort comes from the fact that this is in front of us with no supporting documents and no previous vetting. On the understanding that we've just received from the General Counsel, I am comfortable approving this today, Mr. Chairman.
Following up on Mr. Zimmerman's comment, this keeps going on and off and on and off. If I understand you correctly, Ms. O'Keefe, under normal circumstances, reimbursable projects do in fact accrue interest, and that stays within the project. And we have to approve either always adding the interest or when the interest in fact is used for something. In this case, this was not a reimbursable project. This was very, very different. And what you're saying is that you have a record, which none of us have a chance to see now because we just got this, and that's, I think, why a lot of us are uncomfortable, that says we did approve that for this project, the interest on the funds from the sale and from the other $9 million would, in fact, be accrued to the project itself.
Yes, that is correct.
And that was a board action, yeah. And that's the disadvantage of us not having a chance to prepare and when we get things like this at the last second and we can't really see whether we are establishing a new precedent or violating old precedent. And I appreciate Mr. Zimmerman's comments. Ms. Hutchins, you had something else you wanted to say?
The explanation from the General Counsel now makes me more comfortable with asking not to defer.
Okay. And Ms. Hewlett is also nodding positively?
That was the same question I had about how time sensitive it is.
Okay. Mr. Giancola.
I'd like to approve the resolution.
Mr. Giancola moves. Is there a second? Mr. Zimmerman seconds. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? There are no noes. This one is passed, which brings us to the reports. The first report is by D.C. Mr. Albert is not here. Mr. Giancola, are there any from D.C.?
Gee, the one chance I get to give a report, I have nothing to report.
Okay. The second report is from Mr. Solomon, who is not here. Ms. Hewlett, do you have a report? Okay. And NVTC, Ms. Hutchins. There are no reports. We have already passed a motion for executive session. So I think at this point, what do we do?
Recess.
We recess for executive session.